Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Adria Walden.
My best friend was this girl, Jessica, and Jessica, her parents were like crazy Catholics, mine were like crazy Baptist, and there was this beautiful Venn diagram of religious trauma that really allowed us to bond with each other.
That and more. But first, I'm offering two more 8-week-long online storytelling workshops this summer. One will be happening on Zoom Wednesday evenings from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with the first session being July 9th. And the other one will be happening on Zoom Sunday mornings from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., with the first session being August 17th. Email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn more.
We'll be right back.
Now here's the show. Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. This is Blondish behind me now, and we're calling this week's episode Bi-Curious, one of those episode titles that we kind of bend into different interpretations. Hey, gang! The movie I'm in, called Alma and the Wolf, will be available for streaming rentals in all the places, like YouTube, Amazon Prime, and so on, as of June 20th. So if you want to see me playing a sheriff in a town where all sorts of crazy stuff is happening with wild animals, it's a horror movie, and it's a trip. Go rent Alma and the Wolf. Hey, listen, you might already know, but I am trying to see how many Risk listeners out there might be interested in attending one of our What's Your Story curated social events. These low-pressure, fun social events with icebreakers that we come up with, where you share simple little stories in pairs and small groups. We've done a bunch in person, and they are always a huge hit. So if you want to try attending one online this summer, email me at kevin@risk-show.com if you're interested in learning more about What's Your Story or about my new online storytelling workshops that'll be starting up in July and August. Now, in a little bit, we're going to hear from Rachel Frost and Adria Walden, but first, a story from comedian, actor, director Anna Roisman. It's a story Anna shared a few years back at the Risk Live show in LA, and it's a story we call Aim Me When You're Ready.
So growing up, I was the girl who had like a lot of guy friends, but I was totally scared to kiss them or anything. I was like, I was a prude, you can say, right? I didn't make out with boys for a long time. But I did, in high school, watch a lot of Lifetime movies, and I knew what happens to those girls, right? And I was like, oh my God, I can't go to college a virgin. I have to get this shit done before I go to college. Like, I'm gonna end up like that girl in, like Mother May I Sleep with Danger, right? Like, I'm gonna be like that drunk girl at the bodega, like her first day of college, who's like, who are you? Cool, I'll go home with you. And like, you know, end up in a back alley somewhere. Like, I was just like, oh my God, I gotta figure this shit out. So I was on a mission to lose my virginity before I went to college. So the summer after junior year of high school, I was going to do an acting program in London for the summer, which is probably the best place when you're on the prowl to meet a, you know, a nice heterosexual male, like go to an acting school, right? So I'm in London. I actually meet someone in London, this guy, Mike. And Mike is not an actor, actually. He's in London for like some internship in finance. Something like, I'm like, oh, that's like real. I'm like wearing masks all day. But Mike is hot. I think Mike is so hot. He's like a little taller than me, and he's like blonde, and he wears so much hair gel, like you could throw a rock at his head. Like it's just like one of those like perfectly like hard heads. And I think that's like so cool. And he has no personality, but like a good face. So I was like, yeah, you're fine. And we started hooking up, and I say hooking up in quotes, because that was like, we would like meet on like Thursday nights and like French kiss for a little while. That was hooking up for us. That was our whole relationship. And it was hot. I thought I was so cool. I'm like, I have like a boyfriend in London. So the summer was ending, and Mike was actually from the East Coast as well. He was from New York. I was from Philadelphia. And that was like our one thing we had in common, right? We were like, this is perfect. We're both from the East Coast of the United States. And it was love. It was love. And so as the summer was coming to an end, we're like, oh my God, let's stay in touch. You know, we both are kind of near each other. And I was like, yeah, maybe, you know, he was more into it than me. And I go home and school starts, senior year starts. And I, you know, we didn't really talk that much, but a couple weeks after school started, we're talking on AIM, greatest thing ever. And we're like, going, he's like, are you coming to New York anytime soon? And I had cousins in New York. And I was like, yeah, actually, I'm coming there in a couple of weeks. And he's like, cool, like, we should meet up. And I was like, yeah, you know, we should, I guess. And, you know, he's like, we should have a sleepover. And I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. This is the guy I can have sex with. And then if it's like bad or good, like I don't have to see him. Like we don't even live near each other. Like it's just perfect. I was like, yeah, we could do a sleepover. I'm like typing back. I'm like, oh my God, he wants sex too, right? We're both like in this together. We're not talking about it, but we're both gonna have a sleepover. So I prepare my friend. My girlfriend lives in North Jersey, and I'm gonna go to North Jersey, and we're gonna go and have dinner with Mike and his friends. We like, you know, when you set up like a whole like dinner thing, but everyone there knows you're just there because these two people like are gonna supposed to go on a date, but like you're all scared to, so like everyone knows you're there just for these two people. It was like one of those setups. So we go into the city, and I am nervous. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm gonna have sex tonight. Like, ah, this is scary. Like, I don't think I'd even given a blowjob. Like, this was like, I was just like going for it. If YOLO existed then, like I was living it. So I pack a toothbrush. I'm like, well, my breath better smell good. So I pack a toothbrush. I'm like, oh, this is so bad. I'm like, putting a toothbrush in my bag. And my parents totally think I'm sleeping in North Jersey. And so my friend Steph and I meet Mike and his friend, and we're in the East Village at some like shitty sushi place that serves alcohol to 17-year-olds. Because we're like, cool. And we're at dinner, and I get up to go to the bathroom. And Mike, he's like, come here for a second. And I like go over. And again, full head of hair gel, you know, no personality. He's like, hey, I just want to let you know, I got us a hotel room at the Hilton in Midtown on my dad's credit card. And in that moment, I immediately go from prude to prostitute. I am like, I'm scared out of my mind. I'm like, holy shit, like he got a hotel room. Like will his dad get a refund if I don't want to go? Like I don't know how much he spent on it. Like, what did he tell his dad, right? Like, hey, I know I'm 17, but I'm take some chick back to the Hilton to fuck later. Like, what the fuck did he say? So I like pull my friend Steph into the bathroom. I'm like, oh my God. She's like, you've got to do it. You came here to have sex. And I was like, I know. And what's her advice? She's a virgin too. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I can't say no. So I go back to the table and I start sake bombing, which is the first time I ever did that. And I was like, I don't want to know what I'm doing later. I want to just drink it off. So we sake bomb and I'm drunk. And, you know, we have that awkward like, oh, are you two going together after? And we're like, oh, I guess so. Yeah, I guess we'll go back wherever we're going together, you know, like play it off. And we get in a cab and we go to the Hilton in Midtown. And we go to check in, and the guy at the like reservations desk, like I'm like hiding my face. I'm like, oh my God, this guy knows I'm drunk, and this is like my Julia Roberts moment, and I am like fail. I'm like a fucking like, I'm just like, oh yeah, like he knows I'm here to have sex with this kid, you know? I like I'm panicking. So we get the keys and we go up to the room. In the room, I'm not that drunk anymore. I immediately am like, wait, I know what I'm about to do right now, right? And I set the mood perfectly. I turn on all the lights, all the unnecessary lights Because I'm like, I've never done this before. I got to know what holes go where. Like, what, you know, I don't know what's going on. So I turn on, like, the desk lamp and the hall lamp and the bathroom light and, like, however many fucking lights they have in a hotel room. And we take off our clothes. And we're, like, standing there. It's, like, brighter than this stage. We're standing there naked. And I'm, like, looking at him. And, you know, I'm just, like, focused on that hair gel. I'm like, yeah, I picked you. And I'm like, I say the one thing that comes to mind, so romantic. I'm like, Mike, have you done this before? Yeah. And he looks at me in his cool way, and he's like, Anna, please. I had sex with a girl at Hebrew school a couple of years ago. I totally know what I'm doing. Yeah. I was like, thank God he's experienced, right? Hebrew school, killer. So we get on the bed, and we're like kissing each other. Let me just, I was educated in sex. I'm just going to let you know. Growing up in my house, every Sunday night we'd have Chinese food, and then we'd watch Sex in the City as a family. It was me, my younger brother, my younger sister, my parents, and you know, we'd be sitting there and Samantha would be getting like fucked in the ass, and my dad would be like, kids, you got any more homework to do tonight before school tomorrow, you know? And so I knew sex. I knew 69. I knew the terms. I had seen it before, but in the act, I'm kissing Mike, and I assume you just kiss and make out and make it look sexy until you're ready for sex, right? Like, I didn't know what foreplay was. I didn't know that you're supposed to do other things. I just knew that it looked amazing on TV. So we're doing it, and it's bad. It's small. It's, I don't even know if we actually did. If we do it. We are like, oh, this is sex. And I'm like, what the fuck? This is not Samantha sex. This is... people like this. This is weird and scary, and I don't know that I'm doing it right. But I, you know, but we get it done, I guess. And I pass out, and I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, oh my God, where am I? I'm in a hotel. Oh my, I was paid to be here, basically. Most people have to do the walk of shame after they have sex. I had to get on a bus and do the whole like fucking state of shame drive back to Philadelphia. And reflect on my evening at the Hilton in Midtown, which I occasionally see now that I live here. And I get home, and Mike's like, we should meet up again. I'm like, that was weird. I'm good for a while. But like, I'm also relieved, like on the bus, I'm like, oh my God, like I'm not a virgin anymore. Like I can go to college now and like have real sex. Like I was like, you know, built up from this. So we're on AIM again, and you know, and we're talking or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm good. I think I'm good. Fast forward 7 years, and I live in New York City now, and I was maitre d'ing at a steakhouse, and his name was on the reservations list. And we had Facebook friended each other, so like we knew each other existed, right? Like we didn't talk, but you know, I knew he was around. And I'm like, it can't be. It's like the most common Jewish name. There's like a billion of this guy, like I'll tell you, there's a billion Mike Cohens who live on 22nd Street alone, right? Like, come on. So I'm like, I don't think it's him. In walks Mike and his mom and his brother, and I'm just like, oh hey you, you know, it's really, I'm like, oh right, like hey, and he like introduces me like an old friend to his, I'm like, no, we were like fuck buddies for one night, and he gives me a hug, and he's super nice, still so done up, the hair was still so hard, I was like, really, I haven't learned a new hairstyle since then, and he compliments my skirt, he's like, you look great, your skirt is amazing, it was a good skirt, but I was like, thank you, it's so nice of you, and then they go, and they sit at the table, and I like tell my friend, I'm like, oh my God, I like lost my virginity to the guy. And he comes up halfway through the meal, and he's like, it's just so good to see you. Like, your hair is great. Have you darkened your hair lately? Like, you gave it a little, like, some angles and stuff. And I was just like, oh, my God. He's, like, really nice. Like, he's, like, nice, like, my gay best friend nice. And what if, I think Mike could be gay. And I am, in that moment, I'm like, oh, my God, I turned a man. Like, that was, like... I'm like proud of that. And then I think back to the original AIM conversation, and I'm like, when he asked me to have a sleepover, like we should have had a fucking sleepover, like braiding our hair, ordering in room service, watching shitty movies. That would have been way more fun than whatever we tried to do. So it's still up in the air. You know, I've stalked him on Facebook. It's still up in the air, but that was a really, really random night at the Hilton. Thank you guys.
This episode is brought to you by Lululemon. 10 years ago, Lululemon created a yoga legging. A legging made of a revolutionary fabric that was as soft as it was stretchy. A legging that followed every curve, felt virtually weightless, and held in place during even the toughest poses. They called it Align, and we've been stretching ourselves in it ever since. Now discover the full Align collection, 10 years in the making, at lululemon.co.uk.
Hey there, my name is Jody Avirgan. Have you noticed the present day, it feels pretty rocky? Well, I think history can help. What's more, this little country of ours, the United States, it's turning 250 soon. So how did we get here? On this day, historians Nicole Hemmer and Kelly Carter Jackson and I sit down to look at stories from the past. Silly, surprising, deeply relevant, that feel like they have something to teach us about today. This day, three times a week, you can find it wherever you're listening right now.
We're back. Risk. This is Wheatus behind me now, and we just heard from Anna Roisman, who you can find on Instagram at Anna Roisman. Folks, it's been another rough year for us so far financially, and we are exploring the possibility of making a big change behind the scenes that shouldn't affect our output, our content at all. It shouldn't change the show itself. But we do hope it ends up helping us stay afloat. It's risky, and it might be a while before we can even endeavor it. So here are ways that you can help us make ends meet during this crazy, precarious feeling time. Join our Patreon at patreon.com/risk and get all the perks, including tons of bonus content. And you could be like Brandon Steiner, who is a new $25 per month or more member. Or you can make a one-time donation at paypal.me/riskshow. Or you can join one of my online storytelling workshops I'll be starting in July and August. Or you could attend one of our What's Your Story online social events that we haven't scheduled yet, but we want to know if you're interested. So email me at kevin@risk-show.com about that. Now, in a little bit, we're going to hear from Adria Walden. But before that, a story from Rachel Frost. Now, Rachel got up on stage at a Risk live show in LA, where we asked audience members to volunteer to tell super short stories improvised off the cuff. And if I remember correctly, she told two short stories, and this was the second. So here's Rachel Frost now with a story we call Faithful.
So now that you know sort of most of my adult life story, when I broke up with Craig, or rather he dumped me for the third time, but we'll talk about that later, I had been single for a while and I started dating this guy. His name was Tommy, and he is amazing. And we've been together for like 3 years at this point, and we live together, and we've adopted a cat. His name is Banana. And so things are going really well. And one night, it's like the middle of November, And a friend of mine invites me to go to a concert with her. We work together and she's like, hey, there's this thing in Brooklyn. I go to Brooklyn a lot. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. Let's do it. It's a concert. And so I go out with her and she invites me to this bar to start. And we have a couple mezcal margaritas. And I'm like, you know, three mezcal margaritas deep, which I'm realizing is a theme right now. I don't make good decisions when I drink margaritas. But so we have a couple margaritas. We're having a good time. And I'm just like letting my hair down, right? And a little bit of extra information about this evening. It was a concert in Brooklyn where it was like in a warehouse, right? And it's like that kind of music. So of course I had ecstasy in my pocket. And so we go to this warehouse and I take the ecstasy and I give some to her and we are dancing and we're having a good time and I drink more. And then all of a sudden it's like 3 a.m. and I come out of my blackout and I'm making out with her. And I'm like, that's strange. Who started this? And I don't know the answer to that question. And then we go from making out in the club to making out in an Uber to making out at her apartment. If you've never had sex with a woman, you should try it. It's great. But then it's, 6 a.m. and Tommy, my boyfriend, who I live with, who I own a cat named Banana with, is like, where the fuck are you? And I'm like, oh, fuck. So I go home and I walk in and he's sitting on the couch and I'm like, I gotta take a shower. So I do that and we go to bed. And the next morning he was like, I was really worried about you. And I was like, I know, I'm sorry. I was at my friend coworker's apartment. And he's like, okay. And that's really all we say to each other. And I talked to my best friend that week and I'm like, I have never done anything like this before in my life. And I really love this person. And how could I be a person who cheats on somebody that they love with a person whose gender I don't actually normally date? And she's like, if you don't want to tell him, you don't have to. And I'm like, I guess you're right. And so the week goes by and I'm thinking about what to do. And then another week goes by and I'm like, you know, I really feel like I should tell him, but I don't really know how to do it. And then it's a Friday and I'm at home and he gets home from work and we live in a high rise at the time and we had a set of binoculars that his parents gave us and we are looking at the building that is opposite us and he's like, oh my God, you gotta come look in these binoculars. And I'm like, we've been waiting to see people have sex in the building across from us. So I'm like, great. So I get up from the couch and I'm like looking in the binoculars and he's like, what do you see? And I'm like, nothing. And he's like, look higher. And I look higher. And there is a sign in the building across from us on the top floor that says, will you marry me? And I turn around and he is on one knee and I cry. And he says things that I actually don't even remember. I completely blacked out. And I nod and I'm still crying and he hugs me. And then we separate and I say, but I guess before we move forward, I should tell you something. And I say, I totally understand if you don't want to marry me and if you can't be with me and if you can't trust me. And I never, ever, for what it's worth, thought that I would do anything like this. And I really, really love you. And I really, really want to marry you. And he says, I forgive you. You know, I never really respected people who lie or even who lie by omission because it still counts in my brain. But I think what lying means when it happens is that you're just a human who has made a mistake. And sometimes accepting our imperfections is the most important thing and letting other people see them and do the same. So cheers to being a human.
So the first time that someone called me a slut, it was my mother. And that's actually the only time that anyone has ever called me a slut, because as much as I would like to be about that life, I'm just not. Like, I've always been too awkward and contained to really get myself out there that way. It's not that I haven't tried. Recently, I took that What's Your Kink quiz that's been going around online. And after like an hour of answering hundreds of questions about like ropes and harems and orifices that I didn't know could be used that way, the quiz was like, okay, Adria, are you ready to know what your deepest, darkest desires are? And I was like, oh, yes, Daddy, tell me what my kink is. And the quiz was like, your kink is being vanilla. You really prefer plain sex with like one person, like for life. And I was like, accurate. Freewheeling creative sexual activity has never been in my ministry. But when I was 16, my mother deeply believed that I was a slut. And here's why. What happened was, she was coming to pick me up from a marching band trip, you know, where all the whores hang out. And I was like 5 minutes late getting back to the car, and she was like, where have you been? She was enraged. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I was just talking to Michael about where to put the uniforms. And she was like, a boy? You've kept me waiting for a boy. I didn't know what exactly were you doing with him? And I was like, honestly, like just the uniform. She's like, I don't believe you. I know you were out there just trying to have sex with him. I didn't know I was raising a little slut. I brought you up better than this. And to be fair, she did bring me up better than this. Specifically, she made me sign a contract promising that I would never get in trouble with a boy ever. And I think she thought this moment was me going back on that agreement. And that agreement was my True Love Waits card. I don't know if anyone participated in True Love Waits. It was a stupid program that was really big in churches in the 90s. And we were really big into church. We went like 4 days a week. This was like a big Southern Baptist evangelical situation where services were like 4 hours long and people spoke in tongues. And we had to participate in this True Love Waits ceremony where children, I was 12 when I did this, had to sign a contract. This contract promising that we would, there was this like big ceremony, and our parents like walked us down the aisle and brought us in front of our male pastor and his cohort of male ministers and like promised that we wouldn't even think about the letters P, E, N, I, or S until our fathers walked us down the aisle in our heteronormative wedding. And so I signed the contract, I did the ceremony, and I think after that, my mom was like, great, I don't have to worry about this anymore. She'll never speak to a boy again. She'll probably just take that card and like reflect on it and pray over it forever and be a virgin for the rest of her life. And what I did instead was I took that card to school and I talked shit about it with my best friend. My best friend was this girl, Jessica. And Jessica, her parents were like crazy Catholics. Mine were like crazy Baptist. And there was this beautiful Venn diagram of religious trauma that really allowed us to bond with each other. But whereas the stuff I was taught turned me into this like super like clean cut, straight and narrow, trying to fit into all the molds, little kid, Jessica didn't give a fuck. She was like this punk princess. She was always in like impossibly oversized like skater jeans, and she had this like deeply unbothered posture, and she had this long, straight, like silky hair that she kept jet black and like never cut it. So it was always all hanging down, like always past her waist. And I'm very proud to be a woman of color. I'm very proud of my crown, but I've always been jealous of like naturally like fine straight hair, not for the beauty standard of it all, but for the like wafting, like the wafting, and like Jessica's hair was just wafting all over the place, and it was so cool to watch. And by this point in high school, Jessica had actually dated both boys and girls, which was like radical in small town Texas in the 90s. And it wasn't even about her like being out or not. It was just like her doing what the fuck she needed to do and like fuck anybody who had anything to say about it. And it was great. And she, like I, you know, we wrote sad songs and dark poetry and read Charles Bukowski and believed that love was impossible. And thanks to my mother's efforts, love for me was very much impossible. By the time I was 16, when the slutting happened, despite my best efforts, I had only been kissed, and that only twice, and both of those experiences were terrible. The first one was at a church camp where an 18-year-old guy cornered 13-year-old me, pretended to care about my poetry, and then kissed me, and his kiss was like sloppy and sticky, and he was like, you're not very good at this, and then he like walked off, and it kind of felt like a crime. And then the second time, I was at a friend's party and a 25-year-old cornered 15-year-old me, and his kiss was like sloppy and mushy, and he's like, why aren't you into this? And he walked off, and that definitely felt like a crime. And I was really disappointed that both of these experiences were so bad. And I didn't know if it was punishment for me breaking my true love waits promise, or if this is just how kisses were. Either way, I was super disappointed because I was really craving kisses, partly because I was a teenager and teenagers sometimes want to put their mouth on other people. And partly because I was really craving like gentle, kind, physical connection, because in my home, there was none. Unsurprisingly, the woman who called her child such a name had some mental health challenges. And my mom was like, Claire Huxtable, if Claire Huxtable was like an untreated manic depressive with rage issues and no one who was willing to hold her accountable. So I went to school with bruises on my body often. Touch in my house was punishment. It was aggressive. It was manipulative. Like, I could get a hug maybe if I was like super, super good and did everything like perfect and right. But like casual affection, just to like casual touches, just to say like, hey, hello, I see you. We're here. I care about you. That didn't exist for me. And I really hoped that it was. And I thought that romance might be a gateway to that. But thanks to my mom, romance was out of the question because she was doing everything in her power to keep me away from boys. She didn't care at all what I did with my friends who were girls. And so, like, if a boy called, the phone calls were monitored. This was the days of landlines. So she would just pick up the phone and listen, and we couldn't talk very long. But, like, my friend Jessica and I could get on the phone at, like, 7 o'clock on a Friday and talk until dawn, which we did all the time. If I was running late getting to the car because I was talking to a boy, I would get slapped around and called names. But I was always palling around with Jessica, sometimes being late to things, and that was fine. If a boy had to come to the house for some reason, like for a school project, we had to stay downstairs, all the lights on, an adult around, constantly being monitored. But like Jessica came over, we could go upstairs, shut the door, get under the covers in my bed, and like nobody would say anything about it. And it was nice. It was nice to have that kind of connection because she also came from a pretty dysfunctional family, and it was nice to like be able to bond over that. So one day Jessica does come over and my mom's like, hey, sweetie, go on upstairs. So we go on upstairs to my room and shut the door, and we're talking and like we always do. And we end up kind of trading. We're like kind of going back and forth between reading each other poems and looking at like my yearbooks and photo albums and stuff like that. And we're sitting in the doorway of my closet kind of doing that for a while. And then she like grabs a yearbook and she comes over and she sits next to me and like puts the yearbook in my lap. And she's like, oh, what's this? What's this? Like, what's this? And we're just sitting there talking. And I noticed that as we're sitting there, our like arms are touching. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. Like, again, there's no affection in my home. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. And then I noticed that, like, our legs are touching. We're both sitting, like, crisscross applesauce. And so her leg's kind of on mine. And I'm like, oh, that's, like, is really, like, nice and grounding, actually. That's lovely. And she's, like, leaning over and like, oh, what's this? What's this? And her hair is just, like, wafting, like, Bed Bath & Body Works, like, apple scents, like, up into my face. And I'm like, oh, this is, like, really, like, lovely. And then she keeps leaning over more and more. And she's like, what's this? What's this? And I finally go to answer this question one more time. And before I can answer it, like, her face is towards mine. And then her lips are on mine. And then we're kissing, like, kissing. And unlike the first two, it wasn't gross or sloppy or sticky or mushy. It was just really kind and nice and warm and loving. And it didn't feel manipulative. It felt like that kind of just casual connection to be like, hey, you're here, I'm here, and I care about you. And then we kept doing that for like, I don't know, 5 minutes or an hour. I don't really know. And then my mom calls from downstairs and she's like, Adria, we're late for something. And because I was just upstairs with a girl, she didn't have any reason to be concerned. So she's like, oh, we're late. No big deal at all. Come down when you're ready. And so we stop kissing and then we go downstairs and my mom's like, bye, Jessica. Have like a great weekend. And she gets in her car and we say we're going to see each other Monday. And that was kind of it. And we didn't really like talk about it again. Like a lot of things that happened in high school for kids who have a lot going on behind the scenes, like we didn't really get into it. And that felt okay. It wasn't really about like launching us into a relationship or even some big declaration about my own sexuality. It was just like nice to know that this thing I had been looking for existed and that that kind of connection could happen. I've had a lot of kisses since then. I mean, not like a ton. I'm not a slut. And some of them have definitely been like those first two, like gross and like manipulative and like would not recommend. But some of them have been like that one from Jessica, like kind, connected, 5 stars. And it sucks to have to go through like the shitty ones, but it was really nice of Jessica to set the template and let me know what I was looking for. Thanks, friends.
Risk. This is Bikini Kill behind me now, and we just heard from Adria Walden. You can find her on Instagram at blackgirl_bigdress. And before that was a story from Rachel Frost. She's performing her solo show Lapdog at Edinburgh Fringe this summer, August 2025. And her website is rachel-frost.com. Millie Womble, Millie Womble, Millie, 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 Millie Womble, Millie Womble. You told a funny 5-minute story at our Risk Live show in DC, but you didn't give us your email address. So email me at kevin@risk-show.com and let's see if we can do something with that story. Okay, I'm going to say it again. I am offering 2 more 8-week-long online storytelling workshops this summer. One will be happening on Zoom Wednesday evenings from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with the first session being July 9th, and the other will be happening on Zoom Sunday mornings from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., with the first session being August 17th. Email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn more about that. These workshops are fun and a really fascinating way to be creative in a supportive group where examining your memories and sharing your thoughts and feelings is practiced as an art. And we're hoping to do a What's Your Story curated social event on Zoom this summer too. So email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn more about that too. Folks, on Thursday, we have the Best of Trans Lives number 4 with our special guest host, Peppermint. You might know Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race season 9. She is a singer and a Broadway performer and an activist and a wonderful co-host for the Best of Trans Lives 4 on Thursday. But today, folks, is the day. Take a risk. Millie Womble, Millie Womble, oh, Millie, 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 Millie Womble.